Hello, I'm Zachariah Julian from the Hickory Apache Nation, and welcome to From Here With A View. We are the Seeds Philadelphia podcast. Mozart Gabriel arose from the waters of Taos Pueblo and Red Rocks of the Navajo Tohili. From a village of powerful traditional singers, the Red Willow tribe gave him his name Mozart at birth. His travels brought him later to Nashville, Tennessee, where he made a career in music videos for the local independent artists. It soon brought him to Barcelona to craft his sound with many musicians and many projects featuring Liam Cloud. Soon after, the Vicious Strikes were formed to rock the underground scene. And that's from your website. And it's a beautifully crafted website. Welcome, welcome. Amazing guest. How are you?
Hey, I'm super good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. We just got done watching your music video, Across Seas. And congratulations on the nomination, the Native American Music Awards. What category is that up for?
That's for Best Animation and Best Rock Video.
Oh, dude, it's amazing. And who are the people you worked with? I see Azel and Jared Corder. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Azel is an amazing, one of my favorite Catalan singers here in Barcelona. And Jared Corder is the guy who mixed the whole album, Eager Within the Fire. He's in a great band called Repeat Repeat. He's been in one of my favorite bands. And what's really amazing about that is that I was in Albuquerque right after film school, and I was looking for film gigs on Craigslist. And then I saw this band saying, "Hey, we are playing a show in Santa Fe, come check us out." And I was like, "Who's this?" And it ended up being Repeat Repeat, and Repeat Repeat ended up being like my favorite sound.
Wow.
And it's him and his wife. And they have this really great band. And, you know, what's really funny is because, like, it's kind of the same kind of deal with me and Azel, because I really, really love her voice. And I feel that there's not been enough female support within rock music. And I felt that, you know, I grew up loving so much of, you know, Joan Jett and Hayley Williams and Blondie and Bjork and so much of that. And those are the artists that really made me excited, because I grew up with a high voice and they always had just some kind of really awesome rock to it. So I always thought that rock music should have both. I feel that boys and girls should be able to listen to it and just rock out and feel that they're both included, because that's what always sang in my heart. So when I heard Repeat Repeat, that was the best of both worlds for me. And it was this really cool surfer rock. And when I got to Nashville, I saw them play at Halloween, and they got me my first music video gig in Nashville. And then many years later, when I moved up here to Barcelona, I recorded my album, Eager Within the Fire and Across Seas. Across Seas was the first song that we mixed. And I messaged him and I was like, "Hey, like, I love the way your music sounds. Who does it?" And he's like, "I do." And then so he ended up mixing the album. And I asked him, "Do you think you could put a guitar solo in there?" He's like, "No, I'm kind of picky." And then he listened to the song and it's like, "Oh, I'll do it for this one." And it put this really awesome guitar solo that I really love it a lot. And so I was very grateful to have one of my favorite bands in the world work on this project with me.
Yeah.
And so I really am grateful.
Yeah, that's a beautiful chain of events. Like the raw intensity of female singers, like a lot of them that you were kind of listing off there, especially Bjork. Like a lot of people don't listen to Bjork anymore. And it's cool meeting another musician that does. What she brings is like, she doesn't care. There's no veil. It's like, "I'm Bjork, deal with it." And that's just a great attitude to have as an artist. It's just letting go. It's absolute freedom. But yeah, so that's leading into one of the questions I was going to ask you. Like, how did you get into the whole music video production? Did you study video editing?
So I've been doing films since I was 7. For Christmas, somebody gave me a mini DV camera, and that was with the tapes, right? And I was like, "I don't want this. I don't want this video camera. This is lame." You know, it's so funny because back, you know, like in the 90s, you always saw like, "Well, the really dorky dad," not my dad, but like "the really dorky dad videotaping your birthday." And I was like, "What is this? This is the lamest." It was a dad cam, you know, it's like, and that was the lamest thing I didn't want in my life. I wanted a Lego set of something, or I wanted clay. I was always building these clay sculptures. That's really funny. I'm just I'm just making a new puppet right now. This is made out of felt.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's super cool. It's a really fun process, the whole entire thing I'm doing. But I've always loved making characters. And then once I got a camera and I was watching Gumby one day, I was like, how do they do that? And I was sitting there very frustrated. And then the next thing that happened was a commercial. And I was like, wait, they took a shot of there and then they cut to another scene. I didn't know what cutting was, but my head was like, shot here, shot there. And I was like, and I grabbed the camera and I was like, I took a video shot of something, of like the floor. And then I took a video shot of the window and then I went rewind and I played it back. I was like, oh. And so what I ended up doing is I put the camera on a tripod. I put a little figure right here, took a shot, and then I stopped it and then I moved it. And I was like, oh, I made it disappear. And then I was just like, that is so cool. And then so I was just like, wait a minute. Click, click, yeah. Click. And I was like, oh, it's alive. And then I made all of my favorite claymation figures. Like I played with them all the time. And I ended up making, like I had at least over 1,000 short stop motion animations. Wow. I made every day. And I'm not kidding. There's just cassette tapes everywhere. And when I didn't have enough cassette tapes to make anymore, I would erase over them and then re-record new episodes. And so I remember what like the storylines were all about. That inspired me to want to go to film school. After actually mentioning Bjork, we lived in Venice, Italy at the age, we had to leave the reservation at the age of 9. I was 9 years old. 9 years old, and I was at the Venice Biennale, and I saw the premiere of Bjork's music video "All Is Full of Love," made by Chris Cunningham. And I remember seeing those two robots kind of like make love to each other, and I was already around such like a very pro-sexual family. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, seeing the naked body or see people talking about sex at a young age was not very weird to us. Because it just, that's what's natural. Mm-hmm. At that age. You kind of understood that was going on. And so I saw the beauty of that music video night, and I looked at myself and I was like, that's it. I want to be a video artist. And I ended up going to Chicago Academy for the Arts for high school. And then after that, I went to Columbia College for television and producing. Then after that, I went to Vancouver Film School and graduated there with cinematography and costume design. Then I couldn't find any work. Moved back to New Mexico, tried my hardest to make my career happen, nothing. Tried to make my career happen in Chicago, nothing. It was an awful time being a millennial right after college for my generation. The only job you could get is being a cool hipster at a coffee shop or working at a bar, being a cool hipster, making your cocktails and flipping your hair around. And that was it. You, like, everybody was like, that was the thing. That's what you were going to do. Or especially in Chicago, people are like, yeah, I'm brewing my own beer. And everybody was always brewing their own beer. And those are the only things that people were doing that I saw. And it was really tough because I saw people give up so much on film. I've seen so many people give up on film. And I gave up on film. I totally did. And I gave up on film. And the funny thing was, and then I moved to Nashville. When I got to Nashville, I got an invitation with my dad. My dad says, I'm going to Nashville. I was like, oh my God, I've always wanted to go. We go together. And the first time I see it is at Americana Music Fest. And I see that there's over 100 bands playing every single night. And the first thing I thought of was, it's like, this is it. Nobody is trying to make movies here. But there are tons of musicians. This is the place which you go to become successful. And I went and I got my camera there. I have a really nice camera that I never got to use. And I told everybody, especially at that time, because it was the Blackmagic 4K Urza. And it was like this huge, beautiful camera. And I was just like, yeah, I got a 4K camera. It shoots in like 120 frames and it's super fancy. It's expensive. It's like it's like pretty much like $10,000. It's not really, but you know, when you add everything together, it gets to that point. And I was like, I'll do your music video for $350. I got lights, equipment, and I'll write, direct it, and produce it, and light it and edit it for $350. And they're like, what? I was like, yeah, let's do this. Let's go. Got to pay my dues.
Exactly.
I was like, got to make that demo reel. And I was like, I was so hungry being rejected, rejected, rejected. I was just like, I'm ready to go. And so I got to make a bunch of music videos. And the most amazing thing about Nashville that I really loved was the musicians all got back to me.
Yeah.
I am so used to people in New Mexico. And the reason why a lot of things didn't happen in New Mexico and in Chicago is because it's like, let's go make a movie tomorrow. And they're like, yeah, absolutely, let's do it. And then they don't show up. No one ever showed up. Mm-hmm. Everybody always canceled. It was just, you were left with disappointment. And you're just like, I guess I got to do this alone. And then it was crazy because when I went to music, to shows every night, it was my job to go to see music every single night. That was my job, and to give my business card. And the thing was, is everybody contacted me the next day for coffee. They met me the next day. And then that weekend we shot the music video. And then at the end of the week, I finished it. And then it just kept going and going and going and going. And one thing left to another. And it all started with Repeat, Repeat. And then I met somebody who got me a job to do the Stereo Spectre video. And I got best music video for it, for best cinematography for that music video at the Underground Film Festival in Paris. And that was in the same category as the Adele music video, Hello. And I got that, I beat that. And so I was like very impressed with myself. And so it went to a bunch of other things. And I just kept making music video after music video. But I learned from all these different musicians. Okay. And especially being in Nashville, you know, I wrote all of these songs in the middle as therapy. You know, because I was just like, my music career will never go anywhere. I was just like, I'm a filmmaker. And I was just like, oh. I was like, I don't really care for music. I just do this because, you know, it's cool and it's therapeutic. And when I got to Nashville, I realized I never sing a day in my life because everybody who was up there were telling stories. And it's crazy for me to think that I found that in Nashville and not in the rest of the world that I've traveled around. I didn't see that in Chicago. I didn't see that in New Mexico. I didn't see that in California. I didn't see that in, you know, in the places in Europe or Vancouver. I've been to tons of live shows before, and it was always really stylish. It was always really filled with like epicness or energy or lots of covers. But Nashville had this really crazy vulnerability and storytelling that blew my mind. I couldn't believe it. I had no idea. It was like seeing a really amazing actor perform a scene that took your breath away. Yeah. And the amount of energy that came out from the audience was beautiful because everybody's a musician out there. And so when bands would let the audience sing, people would just come up with all these different harmonies. And it was just like painful in the best way to be like, oh, what is this?
Emotion.
Yes. And because there's so much competition there, you really have to tell everyone who you are within those seconds.
That's powerful.
Yeah. I got to a point in my film career where all my music videos were starting to look the same. And I realized that it was time for me to grow. I found a master's degree in stop motion animation here in Barcelona. Thus the puppets and stop motion and Across the Seas music video. I went here and I ended up, you know, I was very heartbroken because my fiance left me and I was drinking a lot. And so I ended up just, you know, going to a music venue. And I was just like, I had this like crazy dream that I wanted to go to this underground music scene in Barcelona and meet friends. And that happened. And it happened every single night. And I grew up here the last 3 years. And once I started playing, that first time I played, I wanted to make sure that I was just as strong and as vulnerable as the people that sang in Nashville. And I did, and I projected that all out. I didn't let anything go. And I played every single day for 2 whole years, every night, like did not miss a night. And it made me strong, an amazing performer. And like I say before, you know, the first time I ever started singing was through ceremonial songs, and ceremonies have kept us, our people, alive for a very long time. And music has kept me alive. It got me sober, and it made me have strong relationships and a very healthy relationship with a woman I'm very much in love with. And I am so grateful. You know, I've, like when people asked me what I wanted for Christmas this year, I was just like, I have everything I want. And because I'm happy with myself. And I found that through music, you know, it's like, that's the most powerful thing that you can learn from ceremonies too. And I think that's important to teach the younger ones that, you know, it might be boring at the time when you're young and you have a lot of ambition and it's so difficult to sit still and participate in your ceremonies, but it's all worth it in the end because it really will teach you how to survive and become a person that you'll love for a long time, because what they are is that they bring people together. It's a form of not being selfish. When you're outside in the white man's world, that world is very selfish sometimes. And I was just having this conversation with my mother that, you know, when you step outside the reservation, you're having to be no longer native. In that sense where I grew up in Taos Pueblo, there's a lot of traditions, there's a lot of responsibility because you're from a Pueblo and you're from a village and you have to do a lot of these things. And I've gone through a really long time not participating because I've had education and a lot of learning to do, a lot of growth, a lot of especially mental healing that I had to do. And now I'm coming back home. I have a lot of responsibilities, and I talked to my leaders, and I talked to all my other brothers who are participating. And I said, hey, it's time for you to come back home and do these things. And I'm like, I'm ready. I'll do my part. And so those things are really grateful to have, because when you have them, everything I was looking for when I felt very lost inside and sad and depressed, it was because I wasn't really giving back to Mother Earth, and I wasn't giving back to our kivas, and I wasn't really giving back to the elders and the family or the younger ones. And those things, when you let go of them, you're letting go of a tradition that's been passed down for a very, 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 very long time, right? And it doesn't make you feel good. It doesn't make you feel good when you realize that you're not doing those things, because it's just going to sound like all the rest of the very strong disciplining elders. When you don't do these things, you're letting our culture die. And it's true.
It's true.
Yeah, because we're not allowed to write down those ceremonies. We're not allowed to do those things. It was funny. I just saw somebody recently videotape their dances. They post on Facebook, and I'm like, Like, you know, where I come from, I write this politely. I was like, where I come from, we're not allowed to do that. It must be different in your Pueblo, but it's strange to me. Mm. I was just like, I can't speak on your behalf because every Pueblo is different. And I got a couple of ones that are just like, well, it's good because it's good medicine. I was just like, yeah, but there might be bigger consequences on this situation, because what if the younger ones are watching you videotape those ceremonies and they think, oh, I'll videotape those and then they'll go viral and I'll make money off of that and profit off of that because, you know, other cultures haven't seen that before. And then especially, you know, if I was an elder and I saw a kid pulling up their phone while they're seeing a dance, I was just like, like, what makes you think you have time for that?
Yeah.
I was like, what makes you think you have time to pull up your phone you should be listening and watching all the things that they're doing. Learn right now, sing, pray. Those are the times that you're supposed to be. It's like, you should be grateful to have a break from the outside world, because this right here is, nobody else gets that. All the people who have to work every single day. I know I'm getting all elders.
No, not at all.
But like, but those things are so, are so important. And those are the things I really miss, and that I'm really excited that I'm getting older. And I mention and I realize all these things because of the huge following I have on TikTok, and because I have 100,000 followers on TikTok. Wow. And I think about the things I have to share that are appropriate and that are still just only sacred for us. And when the more I get to share about my culture, I'm not selling out my culture, because I am my culture. And when I'm singing my music, I am, that music is me. And all of those things, the reason why, if you really love my music, it's because I'm not lying to you. I'm not trying to give you something fake. I'm really, really trying to just tell you, this is where I've been. And we have this moment to share together, because life is that great here. And it's really that hard. We don't have to do that alone, you know? Ceremonies bring people together. Songs bring people together. Yeah. And I want my music to have that same communication.
That's just beautiful, man. Like, it's, I, first of all, thank you for that story. Being emotional, letting, just being raw. It's, you hear it in your music. And life is all about going in circles, right? We always end up back where we start. When I grew up on the reservation, I grew up with my medicine man. I spent about 5 years with him just doing ceremony. And I wouldn't trade those memories and experiences, you know, for all the money in the world. It's valuable to me. And it's, the analogy I always use is Lord of the Rings. Like, when Frodo and Sam come back to the Shire at the end, they're like, you guys have no idea. You know, they're completely different people. They're just a different stage of understanding the reality. And they just kind of look around like, oh, these people haven't changed at all. And there's nothing wrong with that. Being humble is a beautiful thing. But I'm glad you survived. And the greatest lessons we learn in life is from rejection and from failure. For me as well, I've been rejected constantly. Like, a Native American jazz pianist or a blues pianist that's writing art rock. Who is this guy? But yeah, thank you for those stories. And you actually answered a lot of the questions I was going to ask for me about you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it gets on to a big tangent. It's funny you mentioned about Lord of the Rings, the movie, and we're talking about tradition, and there's nothing wrong with it. That made me think about recently, like, I really love Star Wars, and Star Wars touches everyone because it's such a multicultural, inspirational thing. Everybody really loves Star Wars, like, because it includes everyone. It was one of the first movies that kind of included all cultures. Like, you know, Ewoks are from the Miwok tribe, right? That's what they were based on. You know, when the natives were fighting the first Europeans who came in, they fought in the woods instead of in a line, which would make no sense. And I was thinking about how offensive The Last Jedi is. Oh. And when the director, who I've chosen to forget his name because he's made me so frustrated, wouldn't listen to Mark Hamill. And it made me, it's one of the most disrespectful Star Wars movies to me. And I really get mad about it. It's probably one of my least favorite movies, because they think it's funny to grab the lightsaber and throw it away. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think Mark Hamill said that he would never do that because, you know, lightsabers were based off of samurais, and, you know, George Lucas at the time was hanging out a lot with Kurosawa. And Kurosawa, especially within his own films, they're almost ceremonial, and they're so tradition. He's a very, very strong traditional man, and there is nothing wrong. And then people would say, oh, but nobody's like, nobody wants another like remake of, like, you know, something. It's a different story now. So that, just throw away all of your ideas about what it, there is nothing wrong about telling a story about tradition, you know? And that's where that director missed it. He missed it because he doesn't have enough of that in his life to give Luke Skywalker that respect and to give the rest of the people who loved and appreciated, you know, in a sense, when it comes down to the Star Wars universe, Luke Skywalker is an elder, okay? Mm-hmm. Don't disrespect him. So ridiculous. But it's funny because I get passionate because I feel like someone disrespected my elder because that's the way I was brought up. And that's how I get heated up about that movie. That's how it affects me. And it's different for everybody, you know, but that's what makes me mad.
Yeah. Well, I could sit here and talk to you all freaking day, but I'm going to go ahead and just wrap up and ask you a couple more questions. You're working on a new album. You're recording at the Rio Grande Studios here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. How's that going? Are you finished?
So we made Eager Within the Fire and we played at Indie Market. That got us the opportunity for Kenny Riley to come and contact me. And he said, I want you to come by the studio and check it out. We saw the studio and it was amazing. And you understood this vibe that he really had a lot of love and respect for rock and roll. And he's been he makes rock, really great rock music. And he says he wants natives in New Mexico to feel like they can come to a studio without having to leave their homeland and make a good rock album. And that's what I really, really love about Kenny, right? Mm-hmm. And he really understood us and he really pushed us to a whole new level. And it's really incredible because it's such my favorite album right now.
Yeah.
And I listen to it so much and I never get tired of it. And I always get surprised. Every time I listen to the songs, I'm like, I'm surprised that that's my music. And because I wrote those songs when I was 24.
Wow.
And now I'm going to be 32. And now they're all completely new to me. And I'm so proud of my boys. I'm so proud of Danny, my drummer, for really leading that way for us. He really pushed Danny to say that you have to lead the band. And he does. And Alejandro, he did such an amazing job of just being free and expressive within his guitar solos and allowing us to get there. Even though my bass player couldn't get there, he really, really helped us with pre-production for us to actually find and understood what we were ready for. We didn't waste any time. We recorded 12 tracks in 7 days. Wow. And it was great. It was so much faster. The last album took a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this one took 12 days and it was fast and it was alive and it was vulnerable. I mean, the music feels very present and alive, and I'm really happy for it. So the album is called Sign Me Up for the Apocalypse, and we're just working on all the album art and the ideas and the music videos, and we are hoping to release some of it at Indie Market in Santa Fe in August.
That's amazing. Congratulations. I can't wait to hear it. It's beautiful. I remember when I was like, I think I'm ready to record an album. And I'm not going to name the studio I went to. And they were like, yeah, we'll do it for you. And then all of a sudden, one of the producers like calls me like a couple days later. And he's like, hey, that studio is going bankrupt. But there's this other studio I work with. You should come over here. It's a little more, but blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, God, no, this sounds horrible. And then I just randomly found Rio Grande Studios and I emailed him. And within 5 minutes, I'm not kidding, he emailed me back. Like, this guy cares. Ken, I'm talking about Ken Riley. It's a studio. And I was in his studio the next day. And I'm with you 100%. Like, the guy gets the music. The guy makes, he works to make you feel comfortable. And that studio, it just feels like home. It's like I'm in Jemez, like with my cousins, you know, eating chili. That's what it felt like being in that studio. It was a nice, beautiful pace. So I'm glad you experienced that as well. But yeah, the last question I have for you is, as a native artist, we are paving the way for our future generations. What kind of inspiration and motivation can you give to our youth?
Oh, man. I think I said a lot of it already is that, yeah. You know, I think it might seem boring and it might seem scary and it might seem hard at times to do ceremonies because they're very long, but they are going to continue to make you stronger and they're going to allow you to be so much more present with yourself that you will never be lost in your journey of creativity. And when you trust that, I mean, I've had so many great ideas and I've accomplished so many things. You know, I'm so dyslexic and I still really don't know how to read and write. And I got one of my scripts into the Sundance Institute because of the amount of discipline I had going through ceremonies and being through those traditions, because I knew if I can survive up in the mountains for a very long time, or if I can dance for 8 hours and different temperatures of weather, I knew that I could do this. Nothing has ever been as hard and as difficult as a ceremony sometimes. And once I know that, I know I'm pretty invincible. I used to tell myself when I was younger that it made me feel like a super saiyan because of like Dragon Ball Z, you know, you leveled up and once you got done, you know, in the gravity chamber, you're like, oh, I'm invincible. Don't even try. So that, and the last thing totally is vulnerability is super key to being original. Allowing yourself to honestly be vulnerable and confident within who you are is the one thing that's really going to help you out. Trying to be somebody else is, we've gone through so much and way too much that there's no time for us to follow, that we're always going to lead. And so I think that's what I got to tell all the little ones. I'm not even that big of an elder. I'm only 32, but all the little ones just.
Well said though. Well, thank you for that. If you're ever in the Albuquerque area, New Mexico, hit me up. We'll get some coffee.
Absolutely. We'll be home in August, so we'll definitely hang out. We'll get some good coffee.
Yeah, but yeah, thank you. This is great. Yeah, Mozart Gabriel. I'm excited for your new work. I mean, I'm excited to know more of you. I'm excited that you're continuing on your journey when, you know, that mountain seemed too steep to climb, but you're freaking climbing it. So, congratulations to you. Yeah, thank you so much for being
thank
here.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah.
From the Hickory Apache Nation, I'm Zachariah Julian. This has been From Here with a View. We are the Seeds Philadelphia podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Rock and roll.
From Here with a View, or We Are the Seeds Philadelphia podcast, is produced by Michelle St. John with music by Zachariah Julian and original logo art by Jason Weesaw. This podcast is funded in part by Independence Public Media Foundation.